puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's time for Abandoned Manitoba, our weekly nod to the province's great history. And joining us once again, local history expert Gordon Goldsborough of the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadja.
So remind us about the clue from last week and what we're in store for this week.
Yes, well, last week I said that today we would be visiting a place called Grainfields School. It was a one-room schoolhouse southeast of Roblin, about 60 miles west of Dauphin. And what I said was that because of something that the students and the teachers of the school had done back when the school was in operation, made it extremely hard for me to find the school when I was there 3 years ago.
Love it. So they didn't bury it under sand?
No, they weren't playing with matches and burn it down.
Okay, that's good. So tell us, what happened?
Okay, well, I had been doing some research on schools in the Roblin area, and I had found the geographic coordinates for the school. So I thought, okay, well, next time I'm in that area, I'll go check it out. So I went to those coordinates, and well, all I found was a big, thick bush. There was dense shrubs and trees, and I thought, well, I don't know. So I walked around the outside, and I thought, no, there can't be a school here. I must have got those coordinates wrong. I'll have to just check next time I'm back. So I made a little note in my log, and I thought, okay, I'll look again another time. Well, I went back, checked my notes. I went to some satellite images, and sure enough, I could see the outline of a building there. And I thought, well, what was wrong? I thought I had made a fairly conscientious search, but nothing.
I love that you went to satellite images. Like, this is very high tech.
Absolutely. I was so confused when I just couldn't find the building when I was there. So the next time I went, I was a little more diligent. This time, no, I've got a bushwhack in there. So I went through, and there was all kinds of big thorns on these shrubs. It was really tough digging through all this foliage. But there it was. I mean, the school was there. It was just completely covered. I have never in all my travels seen a building more heavily covered in vegetation than that little Grainfield school building.
I have this image of Gordon Goldsborough channeling his inner Indiana Jones, if you will, fighting through the thicket.
That's right. I had my machete out there hacking away. Yes. Well, and the Grainfield School, of course, just a little bit of its history. It opened back in 1928, and it operated for about 31 years. It closed in 1959. Of course, 1959 is quite a long time ago. That's 58 years ago. So it's been closed longer than it was actually operating as a school.
Do we know why it operated for such a short space of time?
Well, you know, it probably simply opened because there was a need for additional schools in that area. There was enough settlers that they had enough kids to go to school. But it probably closed for the reason that many of them closed, that by this time in the 50s and 60s, they were starting to consolidate schools into much bigger ones. They were probably bused to Roblin, to a much bigger school. So the idea was that they could then get a better education. You know, there was a bigger facility. You know, there was more opportunities for the kids to take education. So that was really the motivation for it closing. And it seems that not much happened with the school after it closed. It basically just sat fallow for many decades.
Is that typical, just to leave a building like that vacant for 60-odd years?
Well, sometimes, yeah. I mean, some of those old schools were turned into people's homes. Sometimes they were turned into a granary or other things. But I guess because in some cases they just didn't really have any use for them, they just sat empty. You know, speaking of trees, and of course the whole story of Grainfields, if we just consider for a moment here in Winnipeg, you know, people often remark when they come to visit Winnipeg, you know, the boulevards are just populated by these magnificent stately trees, you know, these great big trees. What's worth remembering is that those trees are not native here. You know, we are on the prairie, and the prairie is defined by no trees. So clearly then these trees were planted. And so if you think about that, you know, the early history of the trees we have here in Winnipeg, well, back in the 1880s, the provincial government decided that they thought it would be a good idea to promote tree planting. So they basically adopted an American idea where they had a thing called Arbor Day. They, in fact, introduced Arbor Day as a provincial holiday. Everybody got the day off work. The idea was that you would then go and you would plant trees. So the lieutenant governor at the time, a fellow by the name of James Aiken, he figured he was going to gamely go in there. So he and his family, they got some trees. They went around the legislative grounds of the legislature and they planted trees. They encouraged others to plant trees. The idea would be that parents would help get their kids involved and they would plant trees. Well, unfortunately, it didn't work out quite the way they had planned. Because when they gave people the day off work, most of them said, hey, we're going to go to the lake. We're going to relax in the house. We're not going to go out and work and planting trees. So they found that they didn't actually plant as many trees as they had hoped. So I've actually checked with the city forester who told me that they don't know if many of these big trees we have on the boulevards actually date from that period, from the 1880s and the 1890s. In fact, the majority of the big boulevard trees, things like the American elms and the Manitoba maples and the green ash and so on, most of them were planted in the 1920s and 30s. Now, that's an interesting time, the 1920s and 30s, because many of our listeners will remember that, you know, the period from about 1928 to 1937, that was a period of very prolonged drought here in Western Canada. You know, I mean, it was the period of the Depression too, but what made the Depression worse was the vast area of the prairies that was dry as a bone. And so planting trees became a real strategy to combat that drought. You know, trees help in holding the soil to keep it from eroding. And of course, if you have blowing soil, it makes it very hard, you know, for air quality. Of course, it keeps the moisture in the soil because it isn't blowing the soil around. It also helps to prevent runoff. The trees help hold the water in the spring when we have snow melting or after a big rain. They help the trees to help to hold the water to keep it from running off in a big flood. You know, and fundamentally, they provide shade. You know, and in the days before we had air conditioning, for example, you know, it was really nice that you could sit under the tree and you know, enjoy that shade when it was just swelteringly hot, you know, in the middle of the summer. So there were just so many good reasons to plant trees that, you know, people all over the place began to plant trees. So, you know, if we go back then to the area out near Roblin, and we think about, you know, what would they be planting trees to do? Well, farmers were encouraged then to plant trees around their farmyards, you know, to plant a shelter, essentially. In fact, they called it a shelter belt. So now today, you know, we can see a lot of the homes, you know, and all over the province, they have this nice fringe of trees surrounding the yards, these shelter belts. And it wasn't confined just to homes either. You know, public buildings like churches, you know, community halls, schools, you know, they all would plant these shelter belts. In fact, during the 1930s and 40s, even they thought, well, hey, this is a great activity we can even get the kids involved with. You know, teachers could get their kids involved in planting trees and, you know, maybe gardening too. And it would give them, you know, really useful life skills that they could use the rest of their life. So,
again, that resonates, like my kids are doing experiential learning and land-based learning. So it really seems to resonate with what we're doing now.
It was very forward-looking. Yeah, absolutely. And say it dates from this period when it was a real necessity to plant these trees to try to, you know, to keep as much moisture in the soil because it was just otherwise so dry. You know, the Department of Education then, they circulated a little pamphlet. It was called Tree Planting on School Grounds. And it was really neat. They actually have a little drawing in there that showed the teachers, showed the students, showed the school trustees what they should do. They, you know, they would have basically a fringe of trees that would be on the north and the west side of the schoolyard because, of course, that was the direction that most of the wind here in Manitoba comes from. So that's the direction you'd have to protect the best. And you'd put a couple of rows of trees. Then there'd be a sort of an area that they used to sort of catch the snow in the wintertime especially. And then there'd be another row of trees on the north and the west side. And then the schoolyard, the actual yard where they had the kids, where they'd playground and all that would be there, you know, protected by that nice fringe of trees. But they would also, because these trees would take years to develop, you know, many trees are fairly slow growing, they'd have to protect these new little trees to keep them from being destroyed. So what they would often do then is plant some additional trees or shrubs maybe beyond the trees of much faster growing species. And they would use things like carraganas or lilacs or Russian olive or willows or poplars, things that grow fast so that they could get at least a little bit of shelter and they would protect these little trees until they could become mature and provide long-term stability. facility. There are shelter belts, of course, all over Manitoba today that still serve a very important function that we are benefiting from, you know, that even if we do get climate change in the future. But what it also it does for me as a historian, many of these buildings, many of these structures that the shelter belts were planted for are now gone. You know, the Grainfield School is still there and has been overgrown by all of those caraganas and things that were planted by those kids and the teachers years and years ago. But if I'm out on the landscape looking for something, you know, I'm always looking for straight rows of anything, straight lines of trees, because that's a good sign that it was there by the result of human hands. So, you know, sometimes there's nothing left at a site other than the shelter belt. So I'll go and I'll say, hey, there must have been something. And I'll go back and check. And sure as fate, there was a church there. There was a school there. There was a community hall. One of the best signs is when you see a tree. So, for example, south of Austin, Manitoba, there was a school there called Great Carlton. Unfortunately, it was burned down a couple of years ago by an arsonist, but that site will forever be visible because back in about 1913, one of the teachers decided that he was going to plant some trees around the school. And one of those trees especially has grown magnificently large. And so as long as that tree stands, people will be reminded of the Great Carlton School.
So meaningful. Thank you so much for sharing that story.
Glad to do it.
So tell us about next week. What's the clue you have for us?
Okay, well, next week we're going to look at a small building south of Gilbert Plains. So we're still in the same general geographic area. And what this little building shows us is how people used to get a supply of fresh meat in the days before refrigeration.
Gordon, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome, Nadia.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.